Welcome to The Sync Report, the intersection between filmmakers, content creators, and musicians, where we host a weekly conversation with some of the biggest names in film, television, music, and entertainment. Meet industry experts and top-level musicians as we pull the curtain back on music placement and scores, building vital relationships and providing real opportunities for our listeners. Listen to indie filmmakers and content creators present their latest productions and describe specific scenes as they consider music submitted by our audience. Hosted by film star and musician Colin O'Donoghue and his co-host, the godmother of independent films, Rose Ganguza, and The Sync Report's creator and music supervisor, Jason P. Rockwell. Don't forget, tell your friends about us and remember to rate, comment and subscribe to The Sync Report on Apple and across all platforms. Music is the difference between a good film and a great one.
Welcome to The Sync Report.
Thank you, Milfredo and Willow, for that lovely introduction, and welcome to The Sync Report.
I'm a junkie of that song. I've been playing it all weekend.
All right, let's figure out what we're doing tonight. Paula Flack, welcome back. How are you doing? How was your weekend? How's the kids? How's the family? Everyone good and healthy?
All good. All good. We've just been hanging out at home today. Bit of gardening.
No galleries? No museums?
Well, we have we have been to a few galleries. Not today. Yesterday we went to the Saatchi Gallery to catch a new and emerging artist exhibition before it closed. And we went to...
Oh, how was that? Actually,
it was good, actually. But there was some work in there by Stanley Donwood, who you might know. He did some Radiohead artwork a few years ago.
Oh, right.
I believe.
Oh, amazing.
Which was really good, and a couple of other things, which I can't remember now. And we went to another exhibition by a Hungarian artist whose name I can't pronounce, but the work was brilliant. It was so, so good. It was sort of based on Hungarian communist-style cartoons of the 70s. And
if you're listening to this show after show, we've been talking for 4 or 5 weeks. Paula has been on a quest for art and culture with her children. You must go and follow her Instagram. It's actually brilliant. I haven't had to leave the couch, and I feel like I've been to every museum in London. It's fab.
I aim to please.
You are the queen, Paula. You're our queen, and I know we have a big show tonight. Who are we talking to this evening?
We do. So tonight we're talking to Des Shaw. And Des is a multi-award-winning producer with 40 years experience. Wow. Creating and delivering film, TV and radio shows. In 1999, he co-founded 10 Alps, now called Zinc Media, with Sir Bob Geldof. His audio production work includes projects with Johnny Depp, Bono, Annie Lennox, Susan Sarandon, Antonio Banderas, Jerry Hall, Cameron Crowe, Tony Visconti, Deborah Harry, Anthony Daniels, Laura Marling, Smokey Robinson, and Sir Tim Rice.
Oh, my God, incredible.
You know what? When I'm trying to get into a club in future, I'm going to write all that down. And when I say, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just give them a piece of paper. I'm getting in everywhere.
I'm Des Shaw.
I haven't even started on his career there. That's just the beginning.
Oh, my God,
There's more. He was also radio program director with XFM in London, Austereo in Australia, as well as consulting for Virgin Radio in the UK, O2, Channel 4 and Universal Music. Des has won international radio awards for music-based projects that include, this is basically a roll call of the greatest ever radio music projects, Sgt. Pepper's 40th anniversary featuring Oasis, Brian Adams, Razorlight, Stereophonics and Travis, among others. The Guitar That Changed the World, presented by Chris Isaak. The History of Rolling Stone magazine, which was narrated by Cameron Crowe. Bruce Springsteen's Long Walk Home, which was part of a multimedia series that accompanied Bruce's autobiography. The Beatles' final concert, presented by Sir Tim Rice. What's Going On Now, presented by Emily Sandé. And Blue, Pain and Pleasure, presented by Laura Marling. There's still more.
Amazing. I mean, right there, that's like my playlist. It's just everybody I dream to hang out with. And this was making documentaries and films with these people. Amazing. What else?
Yeah, it's a playlist. It's a who's who of music is in film. His film credits include authorized profiles on John Lennon, David Bowie, Pink Floyd, Queen, Mick Ronson, Bruce Springsteen, Roy Orbison, Johnny Cash, and Live Aid. And Des is currently working with Tony DeFries on a podcast series that explores the history of Main Man and the groundbreaking work DeFries did with Bowie, Iggy, Lou, Marianne, and dozens of others in the 70s.
I was listening the last week. I've been listening to that podcast, and I kind of think I hate this guy. You know, he just puts our show to shame. It's just so good.
I think when you talk to him, Jason, you'll change your opinion.
Actually, I don't hate him. I love this guy. Des is truly the king of documentaries. He's produced, obviously, some of the most compelling content, some of the biggest names in global leaders, music, arts. You just heard that list from Paula. I can't tell you how often I've had to seek out his advice over the years. He's been a resource and friend to me. I can't wait to talk with him. I think what we're doing here is really powerful and so important. You know, more than anything, it's meant to be educational. It's meant to be a place to network. It's meant to be a place to be heard. And I hope that we're accomplishing all that. I think we're accomplishing all that. So with no more further delay, Des Shaw, my friend, the king of documentaries, the coolest guy in London. Hello, how are you today?
Jason, hi, everybody. I'm very well, thank you. Very well, yes. James, wherever you are in the world, hello.
Thank you for joining us. First, let's travel back in time to a young Des in a far off land. You're from Australia, is that right?
That's right, yeah. And I was got into music first of all when I was at university in the days back in the 70s, when everybody was, especially when they were studying in studios, listening to vinyl records or cassette players. So you just sort of go into to our studio rooms with cassettes or taking your vinyl of Lou Reed Transformer or Bowie Ziggy or whatever and just sit there and do all our architecture work while listening to all this incredible music. So that's how I got into it.
Amazing. So doing a little research on you, I think you were going in a much different direction in uni, weren't you? You were studying architecture, was that correct?
I did, yeah. I studied architecture for 5 years and music sort of became a priority, but that's where I really got into album music, especially because when you're doing architecture, you spend hours and hours a day in design studios drawing an awful lot. So, of course, you've got to have lots of music to provide the soundtrack to it. So everyone would bring in their own music, and that's why we got this very diverse range of taste, because everybody's bringing in different types of music and sticking the vinyl on the record player or on the 8-track, whatever, and just introducing us to all this different style of music that you didn't get on the radio. So it was very much non-commercial music, which was good, very interesting.
So then you start to become a DJ at a classical radio station. How does that happen?
Because we were doing a design work for a classical radio station in Sydney, a community station that played classical music, and we were redesigning their studios and they were looking for people to play records on a weekend to do a show. And I had a bit of background because I played some classical music when I was a teacher with the WA Symphony Orchestra, so I knew a little bit about it. So I started doing classical music, then got into alternative music, and then thought, you know what, I'll give this commercial radio malarkey a try for 12 months and see what happens, and then 40 years later I'm still here.
Okay, wait, you're going so what instrument did you play?
A clarinet.
A clarinet, amazing. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, I studied French horn and violin and piano and guitar, and you know, I never became a master. I couldn't play it on stage, but it really helped me with my hearing. Do you find that studying and that classical surrounding gave you the ears? Do you have the confidence to move into music and be, you know, telling stories about music? Or
it does, because a lot of people, you'd be surprised how many people did start with classical music. But even so, just the fact that learning to read music on the page, a lot of obviously pop musicians don't, but some people do, and just structure, chord structures, and understanding how music works and how progressions work and so on, the basic background you get from classical music is really helpful going into popular music. Yeah, big time. Absolutely, yeah.
So, look, we welcomed you with a Stooges track. You know, I'm a man.
Iggy.
So what's the relevance of that? That's
the theme song for our Main Man podcast, because it's one of the pieces of music that Main Man were working with back 50 years ago when they first started off with David and with Iggy and with Lou. And it's a fascinating story with Tony DeFries, who is the main man. And he's just basically in a podcast, we're going through 50 years ago, in chronological order, all the things that happened when he first met David Bowie, what he wanted to do to redo Bowie's deals so that he could get him his rights and provide him with a financial freedom to focus on his music. Through that and the connections with Andy Warhol, they then met Iggy and Lou and so on. So it's a fascinating story to tell, and Iggy's Man is the theme tune from my Main Man podcast.
It's such a good song. And we're going to talk more about we're going to close with the podcast.
Okay.
I'm obsessed with your podcast. It's so good. The production's amazing.
There's just a quick question. They say that classical artists are the only artists with any kind of work ethic. It's kind of every other kind of artist has got this kind of manana attitude. Would you say that's true about classically trained? You know, have they got this much better work ethic?
I was actually recently working with a classical musician in opera. We were filming for a whole week, and it was a project where they also had some people from contemporary music as well, some blues and soul. And you're absolutely right, walked all over them because their level of professionalism, they were there all day, every day. They knew all the lyrics. Every time they did another take, they were ready to go. Meanwhile, pop musicians had their people draft out the script for them, film the lyrics and everything. So you're absolutely right. But they also know how to party too. They also party as well as anybody in the rock circle. There's more sex, drugs and rock and roll in classical music than there is in rock and roll.
What was the guy's name that used to do the violin?
Nigel Kennedy.
There you go. Yeah. Perfect example.
Great example.
Yeah.
Actually, he's friends with Donovan and my wife's family. Yeah. What stories I could tell you about that guy?
Yeah, I got a few for him. Yeah. Anyway, we continue.
I love it. So, well, this is so interesting. So, you're going from classical, and then you're working in this architecture scenario. Everyone's bringing in different songs. You start to DJ. And so what are the songs that, you know, you're playing at this point when you're DJing?
It's 70s. So everything was around the time of, it was 71, 72, 73. So it was all Iggy. It was David. It was Lou. It was Pink Floyd. That whole period when everybody was really into, like, vinyl records. Well, they did into the 80s anyway, but especially that period into the 70s after the late 60s when the Beatles and all the others sort of came along and made the album a work of art. Vinyl became treasured by everybody, and it really was the focus of music back at the time. So anything on vinyl, and people would just go to record stores and spend hours and hours and hours there flicking through import records and so on, and dragging out some of the coolest things they could find at the time and play. So that was a big introduction to music back in the days when you'd listen to side one and side two of an album all the way through.
So, you know what, on that, let's just take a quick pause. Milfredo, can we spin that Lee Reed track for Des?
I was sleeping, gently napping, when I heard the phone. Who is on the other end talking? Am I even home? Did you see what she did to him? Did you hear what they said? Just a New York conversation rattling in my head. Oh my, and watch.
Great song. Great song from Transformer, classic album, 50th anniversary of that album next year. And very important, because that was basically highlighting what was happening in Warhol's factory at the time and how bitchy and nasty it was. And it just provides a great link, which we'll talk to you later, about the importance of Warhol to Bowie when they met exactly 50 years ago next week, and how that helped.
Oh, amazing. Sort of, oh, and the timing. Music. Oh, I love it. And a cliffhanger too. It's so good. All right. We're going to talk more about that one. So tell me then, how does Des A get from Australia to London? How do you transition from, you know, behind the decks to actually behind the camera?
Working in radio, I was very fortunate. Worked at a radio station that was owned by a television network. So the radio studios were in exactly the same building as the TV studios. And then December the 8th, 1980, the day that John Lennon died, both TV and radio had to put together a very, very fast turnaround tribute program to the career of John. So using all the archive that we could find from the record companies at the time, we produced a TV special that went out that night and soundstripped some of the audio from it to make a radio documentary, and vice versa. We used some of the radio documentary to go underneath all the visuals for the TV program. So that started what we then tried to do from then on, which is using TV interviews to create radio, or creating radio formats to turn into TV programs. And that's something that I've done an awful lot, well, ever since December the 8th, 1980. And every time we do a radio or TV program, we're always looking at ways of using that to turn it into either podcast material or television to radio and so on. So we've been multimedia for several decades.
So can you remember the first film documentary that you produced?
That was the Lennon one, that night, that December the 8th, 1980. So we threw together in about a 12-hour period, we put together a very, very fast turnaround television and then a simulcast for a radio documentary as well. So that was the very first one.
So how do you do that? That's fascinating. I mean, I labor with these contracts and try and just to get the sync rights. I mean, I can only imagine what you have to do to get the stock, the archive footage. And, you know, how can you turn that around so quickly? Amazing.
Because the record company were very much on board. They knew as soon as we had heard the news flash that something had happened, we had great contacts in the marketplace with all the record companies, and they came forward with some archive material that they had. So in that instance, it was done fairly quickly and fairly easy because we had their full support. So it wasn't like you had to spend hours and hours trying to get permission from everybody, because they were there already done. And also in that situation, when you're doing it, it's sort of like fair dealing, because it's a critique, it's an observation, so it makes it a little bit easier. But if you can get, obviously, as you guys know, when you get the record company and the artist behind you, then it most of your work's done.
Amazing. So amazing. Mm. So as you're transitioning from a DJ to a filmmaker, were there directors, were there documentaries, you know, what were you absorbing at that time to hone your skills?
We were quite lucky, because back in those days, 70s and then into the 80s, late 70s into the 80s, there were, especially in radio in Australia, we were very similar to what AOR was doing in America. So we would go 6-7 tracks deep off an album, or then when CDs came along, CDs. So obviously then some of the biggest bands in the world would come down and tour. So that's the point when we started to do tour documentaries, when Bowie came through for Serious Moonlight, for example, mm-hmm. things like that. Dire Straits came through. We would work with the record company and the television people to put together tour diaries of what was happening at the time, and promotions and cross promotions. And we did a TV show when I then moved to an FM station. It was called 96 FM. We actually put a Friday night documentary music clip show together called FM TV, because it was broadcast on FM and then stereocast on the TV station. And then within 12 months, of course, MTV started, and we got a sort of cease and desist order to say you can't use that title anymore. But our FM TV started 12 months before MTV, and that's how we've always worked really closely.
How cool
with the record companies.
Okay, so Des, tell me, through Main Man, you must have done some research. Give us a little insight on that transformation of Bowie's early years with the long hair, wearing dresses, and then transforming into Ziggy Stardust.
The Main Man stuff was, De Vries was doing that. He started when he first met Bowie in 1970 and then into 71. So all of that period of his stuff, which we're still coming up to later on, that was all when Bowie was still doing Hunky Dory. When he first met him, it was just The Man Who Sold the World. Bowie had his long hair. He still was wearing dresses and so on. And then slowly over a period of time, as De Vries redid his contracts, and Bowie met these people in New York, especially the pork people in London when the show came to London, then started to change the way he dressed and his hair and everything. And then that's when the Ziggy transformation started, in late 1971, early in 1972. So all that material is well before the Ziggy
so thing. You know what? We're gonna swap some questions around. This is the perfect intro. Milfredo, let's play that Monage Daydream guitar.
Yeah, I'll tell you all about that too. Absolutely. Fantastic. Mick Ronson doing, that's the guitar solo from Moon Age Daydream, which was from the Ziggy Stardust album. And that's taken straight out of the desk at Trident Studios in London in 1971, when they were doing one of the final songs that were going to appear on Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders of Mars, which was released the following year. So that's it. That's the actual live studio version, split from the desk, of Ronno's legendary Golden Gibson guitar being worked to the max. Turn it up to 11. So Bowie friends,
I mean,
are freaked out.
What a gem that you've shared with us. Unbelievable. I mean, first, I'm going to skip back. Let's go backwards a bit, because I don't want to skip over Sir Bob Geldof. And how did you connect with this I mean, I can't tell you, this man, I was homeless, during high school. And I remember when Live Aid happened and seeing the world come together through music to do something positive, and it completely changed my life. So I can't tell you what your partner means to me. Can you tell me about the first time you met him, how that happened?
Yeah, working in radio in Australia, again, we had fantastic ratings, especially in the 80s when we were going, as I said, 6 and 7 track deep into CDs and albums at the time, basically doing our radio. So we were able to do and take some latitude with our format. It wasn't as strict as it is these days, so we could sort of play around with some things. And we used to do special guest presentations for like weeks or 2 weeks at a time. And Geldof was promoting some of his music when I heard an interview with him where he played his favorite songs. And he played a set of music that was fascinating because he went from Patsy Cline to The Clash and explained what the connection was. Because a couple of the guys out of The Clash were massive country music fans, and they had a similarity in approach to sort of what the sort of punk country that Patsy Cline was. And it was a fascinating talk break. So we contacted him and said, what you did there on the radio, how would you like to do that for a whole week? And how would you like to do it in Australia? And how would you like to do it in February when in London the weather is garbage? So he said, fantastic, can I bring the wife and kids? And we said, of course you can. So he brought Paula and the kids out, and he did a week on air as the drive jock every afternoon, God, playing his favorite songs.
What was he playing? Do you remember what he played?
While Paula... it was all at the time that... It was each week was themed slightly differently, but he started off doing most of the stuff. It was Elvis Costello, The Clash, all that stuff that came out of the mid-70s that was deeply inspired by U2, all those songs. The ratings went through the roof. The reviews were fantastic. He stayed on and did a tour with his band afterwards. And then he said, oh, I like that. I might come back next year and do that again. So he did. So he came back year after year. Every February would come out and do a show on 96FM and play his favorite songs for a week. And we got to know each other really well. And at the time, he and Paula were working on The Big Breakfast in London. And Paula, great show. And Paula was doing all the interviews, and she would have all these fantastic people on. So you'd see Sting, you'd see Pete Townsend, movie stars would come in, Sylvester Stallone. And they would film them for 15 or 20 minutes, but they cut it down to like a 3 or 4 minute section on TV. And I said to Geldof, what happens to the audio for that stuff? Because it would make great entertainment news for radio. Because back then, it was just when entertainment news was taking off. And he said, I've got no idea. I'll find out. So he went back and said, what happens to the audio? And they said, it's all sitting there in the corner. So I said, well, what are you going to do about making entertainment news? And we can syndicate it internationally for radio, because these people, when they're doing a show, they only come into London or Dublin or whatever, and then New York, and that's it, because they don't travel across to Australia or to Tokyo or anywhere else. So radio stations around the world would love to syndicate that stuff for entertainment news. And he said, well, I don't know how to do that. Why don't you come to London and show me? So I went and worked at Planet 24 for a couple of months to put a business plan together to share with them how it works. And they said, okay, well, let's give it a couple of months to see how that goes. And that was 1995, and now it's 2021. You know, I'm still here. So a 12-month journey ended up being 21
absolutely
years or whatever.
Incredible. Milfredo, let's play that Geldof track, and then I have a couple more questions for Des.
One of the best sing-along songs ever. Great song.
So many people just don't even know that track. It's just so good. Everybody should have that on their playlist.
Yeah, do you know what, Jason? Sorry, but I wanted to. Do you remember a track called Fall Down? I think it was on Mondo Bongo album that Bob Geldof did. Do you know that track, Des?
And
I was desperate to sample it, and a friend of mine was a first assistant on The Big Breakfast, so I went in specially just to ask him if I could sample it. And I said, you know, I was so nervous and stuff. I said, what would you think the possibility of remixing that track would be? And he said, you say remix, I say ruin. That's what he said to me. And I went, yeah, all right, no worries. And on I went.
But did you get a chance to ruin it or not?
No, not a chance, no. He gave me the dead eye, and that was it. I drew a line under it at that
point. Well, we're going to have to do it anyway, just to ruffle some feathers. I love it. Excellent. I had to play that song, my favorite Geldof song. And now kind of pivoting into your podcast, you know, what a transition. You know, here you've made films and documentaries about all the greats, all the important stories in music. Why podcasts?
Because it was a great way to tell the full story. We all know when we've made documentaries, for example, and you've got to do 2 o'clock. So you put a whole, you put months and months of work into it and you cut it down to 57 minutes. But really, there's another couple of hours sitting on the floor because you weren't able to use it, whether it's television or radio. And a podcast is the ability to do a really deep dive into everything. And Tony DeFries is such a fascinating person. He's got so many amazing stories to tell, and he's never told them before. So it made perfect sense to say to Tony, let's just go through week by week in chronological order what happened 50 years ago and do a really, really deep dive into it. And that way, with a podcast, you can do that. So, for example, this last week, we've been talking about the minutiae of the deal that he did for Bowie, the record companies that he went with, why he went with them, what he wanted to achieve out of that, how he made sure that Bowie had his own rights to all his music, because at that time, not many people did. So that was groundbreaking, the deal that he did, that he signed September the 9th in New York with RCA back in 1971. So we're able to go through everything, all the people that he met, all the deals, the actual sit down, have the conversations that he had with David and Angela when they first met, and what he thought he could do with his music and where he thought his potential was. And so as each week goes by, he has got this amazing collection of all this memorabilia. He's got all the contracts that he did originally, all the handwritten notes that David sent to him back in telexes, of course, the day of telexes. They were firing telexes around the world all the time, and he's kept them all. So they've got fantastic telex communications between people from the New York office and the London office, talking about how they put Bowie on the road and what they were going to do and the logistics of doing that. Because don't forget, this is in the days when there was no mobile telephone, so everything was done via either lines or telexes. So it's an amazing collection. So a podcast made perfect sense because Tony can just sit there and just talk about anything he wants.
Probably one of the biggest stories in music. You're telling David Bowie's story. How are you dealing with music, and what is it like, you know, for the musicians in the room, the filmmakers in the room that might want to do their own podcast? Is that difficult to mix the music with the story?
It's very difficult, as we all know, with podcasts, because, again, licensing is an issue and they're all over you. They're red hot. So you can only use songs that are obviously owned by DeFries or Main Man at the time in the story. But all podcasters have a similar scenario. You've got to know what you're doing at the time and who you can license from, and how you can go about syncing it, because, as we know, if you try and pitch programs to any of the major platforms, Spotify or Audible or anybody, the first thing they talk about is how much budget they'll need to clear the music, because it's a big deal. So you've got exactly the same. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You've got to make sure you've got all your connections. And
amazing. Well, we're not done talking about Main Man, but I just want to give a shout out to everybody in the audience and let them know, A, thank you for joining us for this incredible interview. And if you have a question for Des, we're going to bring everybody up on stage that has raises their hand. But continue on to Main Man. You're up to episode 41.
44.
So 44 now. You give me, of the 44, and this is probably like an impossible question to answer, but what's your favorite story?
I think they're all amazing, because I'll start with the first one, because Tony Zanetta, who was part of the Warhol factory and was very much obviously involved in Pork and met David and Angela here in London, and then went to dinner at their house when they stayed at Haddon Hall, and also used to hang out with them when they went to the Sombrero, which is the gay club that Angela and David used to hang out at in the 70s. That whole period is fascinating, because David was really enthralled by Warhol and really wanted to meet him, and he was fortunate enough to do so when he went to New York in 1971 to sign his contract. But he was just, that whole world of people that Lou Reed sings about in Transformer, they were right there on stage, and every night afterwards they'd hang out together. So there'd be Lee Black Childers and Tony Zanetta and Cherry Vanilla and Wayne Jane County and so on. So he was getting to get a close up, hang out with these people and see how they worked creatively and how they really were sort of breaking new ground with their art, because they didn't give a stuff about rules or regulations or anything. They just did whatever they wanted to do. And that became a very key component of the marketing strategy for Ziggy when they went to America, because they used all the Warhol people. We ended up becoming Main Man employees, and they were the people that were pushing the marketing and promotions of the album. That was DeFreeze Masterstroke, was to get them involved. So they just blitzkrieged their way across America, promoting Ziggy and all the gay clubs everywhere they could, and just made a huge fuss about him, and ended up obviously at work. So that connection, all the stories about David and Angie with all the Warhol people, is quite fascinating, because it's a really intriguing part of how Ziggy came to be Ziggy.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, these stories, this is incredible. And as you can see, our stage is kind of filling up. Before we bring people up, Eric, I just want to point out who's on the stage, and I'd like to get them kind of involved with this conversation. Obviously, you know, Eric Campbell, Sean Hurwitz, Smash Mouth, and so many other iconic bands. Such a brilliant musician. Awesome. I've also brought up Tommy Jackson, who has like the golden ears. This guy is just amazing. His history is incredible. In fact, the next couple people, each of them host their own room, and I try to go to their rooms as often as possible, because they're giving knowledge, they're giving plays of music that you haven't, you can't believe how good this stuff is. At Tracy Durant, who I've connected with last month, and I'm just obsessed with her room. I adore you, Tracy. I'm so glad you're here. And Rachel, where are you, Rachel? Rachel's also joining us on the stage, her room. She's built this incredible songwriter community. I'm glad you guys could join. Do you guys, you know, from your perspective, you know, A&R, Tommy, and Syncing, and Tracy, with your background in sync and publishing, Rachel, Sean, do you have any questions for Dez and what we're talking about here?
Man, I'm just listening. I'm such a fan. Tommy, this is
me
cool.
Too. It's almost overwhelming. It's like I kind of want to just get out of the way and let Dez continue.
So at the moment, rights is a really hot issue, because everywhere you go now, you see every week another major artist has done another deal, selling the rights to record companies or publishers for huge amounts of money. So rights is a really hot topic at the moment for people, especially when people are starting out in the industry. Young performers don't understand they've got to be right on the money with their rights, or else they sign their life away and they never get to see them again.
You know, I don't think the deals are being done quite as bad as they were in the 60s, but what a ripoff. Just to give you an example, Donovan got his first royalty in 2006. If you can imagine, this man had 10 number one hits, multi-platinum recording artist from the 60s, and never got a penny until 2006. So yeah, Dez, you couldn't, you know, be more right. You got to be very savvy with your deals. And it is interesting now. I mean, you know, Tommy could actually probably weigh in on this, but it seems like, you know, it's more partnership deals with artists now, where labels are actually doing more 50-50. You know, you bring the production and the track, and they handle the marketing and distribution, which, you know, seems to be me a much more fair setup, you know, a better advantage for the artists. So incredible. Do we have anybody we can bring up to ask Dez some questions about any of the iconic films that he's created? Rachel, you got something?
Yeah, I was just going to kind of dig in a little bit about, thank you, Des, for being here. This is amazing. About rights. What can you say to indie artists who are just starting out, those folks that you just mentioned? Any kind of words of wisdom in your experience?
Get a very good lawyer right from day one. Know that you've got to control your own rights, otherwise you'll lose them. So I think it's important for young people. The number of people, keep people talking, like Taylor Swift, for example, who's having hassles at the moment, but it's amazing how many people, there was an artist once who gave a very, very good example. When they first started out, Richard Branson said to them, I'll give you $1 million to do 5 albums. This was a band. He said, I'll give you $1 million and your first 5 albums. And they all went, that's amazing. Yes. Okay. Where do we sign? And the lead singer went, hang on a second. Let's think about this. Let's go away overnight, have a couple of drinks and come back tomorrow. And the rest of the band got really angry and said, well, you're mad. The offer's on the table now. He said, no, let's go away and talk about it. So they then split it up. And they said, okay, there's 5 members in the band. So there's 5 albums. You look at $1 million. First of all, you got to take tax off that. Then you split that down. And there's five. It turned out the maths was each of them with a deal really wasn't that they didn't want that in the end. So it's amazing how in the industry people can blind you with figures that you think this is great. And you sign on the dotted line and you've signed your life away. So the rights thing for anyone starting out, everybody I talk to always says the most important thing to do, get a really good lawyer from day one who can advise you on what to do, exactly the same as Klein did with the Stones and the Beatles and DeFreeze did with all those other great artists that you mentioned.
Here, here.
Mickey Most. But,
please, all you songwriters, keep your publishing. Hold on to your publishing. That's just so important.
There's a great David Crosby interview that is running around the internet this week because he's promoting some new stuff that he's done. He talks about how he had to sell his rights because he had to pay his mortgage. And there's some great quotes that he has about the record industry that I'm not going to repeat because he's got better lawyers than me. But his advice is great. So if you ever need any advice on the music industry, read everything that David Crosby's got to say because he's seen it and done it all.
What? So about Crosby, you've been doing, you're working on a Joni Mitchell documentary. Did you connect with Gary Calamar?
I did, Jace. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'll tell you all about this. It's a long story one day, but you did. Yeah. Gary's a great guy.
Did it work out? Did you get your Stephen Stills interview?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Thank you very much. Yeah. It was fantastic. It's very good. Very cool. Very cool. So thanks for your help.
This has been a blast.
No, my pleasure.
Des, I have a remix, a Joni Mitchell remix I've got to send you. I've got to shoehorn it in.
Oh,
right.
I feel some magic coming. Definitely. I'll connect you guys. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Okay, thank you.
Sorted. Thank you, Des.
Excellent. You. Des, again, the king of documentaries, my dear friend, somebody I try to walk in his footsteps and learn from on a daily basis. Thank you for spending the night with us. You're a mensch.
Thanks, Jace. No problem at all. Anytime.
And best of success on the podcast, on the Joni Mitchell documentary. And if you ever want to come back and tell us more stories, there's an open door to you.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jace.
Hey, Jason. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Just buried in paperwork.
Oh, for the sync report.
Not this time. Move me no mountain.
That indie film your music supervising?
Yeah.
Sounds like a great project. What's the problem?
It's a brilliant film and we're building a great soundtrack, but you can't imagine how much paperwork I deal with for these films.
Have you heard of Sync Lodge?
First, you got to draft up the sync request forms.
I've heard of Sync Lodge.
Then drafting and issuing contracts.
Yep, Sync Lodge is great, Paula. It does everything a music supervisor needs.
Then deliver the cue sheet. It never ends.
Doesn't Sync Lodge do all of that automatically?
Sweat Lodge? What are you guys banging on about? I got real issues I'm sharing with you guys.
Yeah, lots of issues.
We're trying to tell you, Jason. Sync Lodge is a new platform for music supervisors. It helps you to source the music, sync songs against scenes, draft up sync requests, and even creates the cue sheets once you've locked in the music to the film.
Whoa, Sync Lodge does all that?
It's true, Jason. I just started using it for the sync report, and it's not only saving time, but it's so easy to use, I'm actually enjoying the work.
You guys are the best. Sync Lodge sounds amazing and exactly what I need for music supervising. Why am I always the last one to hear about these things?
I've been telling you about Sync Lodge for weeks.
Don't feel bad, Edge, for not telling me sooner. I know you're busy. You're a good guy.
Paula, is my mic on? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Edge.
Guys, what's the name of that program again?
Sync Lodge.
That is something to scream about. Yes, you too can be cool like Edge and use cutting edge technology to help you with your film and TV productions. No matter if you're a music supervisor, director, producer, editor, save time and increase proficiency with Sync Lodge.
I need to find a new gig.
Sync opportunities, sync opportunities.
So I'm Kevin. In case you guys don't know, Kevin Sharpley. I'm your host today. Jason P. Rothberg is out for the day. So I'm taking the reins. I'm going crazy. It's going to be crazy. So I definitely have to give a shout out to our team. We have Jody playing our moderator today. Jody's on the ones and twos. How you doing, Jody?
I am doing well.
She's well. She's the only one that's not sick. She's well.
Yes, so. I am not sick today. I'll be the silent moderator. I'm putting everybody in and out and on stage.
You might have to be a little bit more vocal. Lisa has laryngitis, although okay. She's been doing great.
My laugh is a little bit high today.
Yeah, but you sound good. I like it. The voice, it's a sexy hoarse voice.
Thank you. I'm going for the Demi Moore.
Feels good. Heather. How you doing today?
I'm good. I'm also sick, but I'm actually going to have dinner with someone who is sick because of me. So that's the only person I can see. I'm so excited. I haven't seen people in like 4 days.
Oh, That's a prerequisite. If you get someone sick, you have to have them over for dinner or buy them a gift. You have to do something.
Now I feel bad because they invited me.
Oh, that's okay. Bring something nice.
I should.
Paula, how you doing?
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm very good. My kids have spent all day playing with 4 kittens that appeared in our garden today.
Oh man.
And not how the many kittens are you in keeping? The beginning.
Yeah, it's so cute. They're 8 weeks old, apparently. We thought they were feral at first, but they're not. They belong to a new neighbor of ours. So they have offered us one. The temptation is great.
Resist. Resist.
No, I know. Don't resist. Don't.
Don't resist. Okay.
Well, we've tried pets before.
Uh-oh. Famous last words. We tried them before.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't try them again. Phil.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing? Good to see
you. Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm so well. It's not funny. I'm really fit, actually. Making it for everybody else.
There you go.
It's 31 here today in the UK.
What happened?
It's been 31. It's just boiling.
It's nice.
We don't get that weather normally, so it's been super hot. Been topping up my tan, working in the garden.
It's going to stay like it for a whole month, Phil, apparently.
I believe allegedly. So, yeah. Yeah.
Are you laying out, Phil?
I'm not. No, I've been working in the garden. I'm still working on the studio. But I'm going to, buddy. I am going to. Definitely.
You're not laying out in your Speedo?
No. Well, I'll put my Speedos on just to do the work in, you know.
You got to go shirtless, y'all.
It's a look, right? You know?
Speedo in the garden, right?
Yeah.
You got to go shirtless so you don't get the farmer tan.
If I'm being honest, it was a you know, all-in-one leopard skin mankini. But let's go.
Okay. Vinks. Sir.
Yeah, baby.
Hey, how you doing?
Still just doing that French thing, man. Just enjoying the beautiful weather and jazz festival season. So I'm in and out a lot, but I love it. Made it just in time for the show.
Yeah, well, we needed your sexy voice. There's no Jason today. So everybody's in the house. We were going to start the session off with the metaverse and Web 3. Do you think you can kick us off, Dan?
Yeah, sure. I know we were going to say there's any questions. There's an awful lot happening at the minute. It's kind of half crazy.
Can you tell us what's happening in the world of cryptocurrency right now? Because it's up, down, up, down, up, down.
Oh, it's chaos. So basically, this is, you get quite strong financial cycles in crypto. We've seen a lot of them over the last sort of decade or so. And it's always the same sort of thing that it's worthless, it's dead. Then it starts to go up in price and Bitcoin leads the way and everything else starts to follow it. And then more people hear about it and think, oh, it's a good way to make money. So they all jump in, the prices all spike. And then everyone who's been in it a while goes, we've seen this before. We're going to sell what we've got. We all get out and everyone else goes, who bought in at those prices then panics and sells off and it plummets down. So I say, I don't know what the price of Bitcoin is today. It was roughly 20K last time I looked. So that's down from upper 60s, I think. Ethereum's down $4,500 down to 1,300-ish, give or take. And it just happens a lot. Particularly, there's a lot of corporate investment space at the minute. There's a lot of companies putting Bitcoin in particular on the books. And that's helping stabilize that size a bit. That it's a risky bet to have if you've got a big chunk of your finances in it at any time.
Well, what I think is ultimately, because it's such a backbone for a lot of what's happening moving into the future, and that's metaverse, the blockchain, that NFTs, of course, that it's going to be propped up as a lot of these offerings become more readily available. I mean, I could even talk about, there's a conference that one of my companies co-sponsors every year, and we're bringing in Brenda Gilbert of one of the biggest entertainment production companies in the world called Braun Entertainment. They're behind The Joker, which is a big enough film in and of itself. The list goes on and on of films that they've either funded or they've produced or they've co-produced. And their big push is in metaverse and Web3 and NFT. So they've invested tens of millions of dollars into the space. And you're seeing more people investing, you know, and upwards of tens of millions of dollars into the space. And that could do nothing but help to level the market out. So we have Tyler, who's come back.
I'm alive from the dead, I think. Can you guys hear me? How are you guys doing today?
The good old reset. Good.
Yeah.
Good. How are you?
That's what it takes. Oh, not too bad, man. It's been a crazy week.
Tyler, we're just talking about the latest and greatest. Do you have any little tidbits to share?
Yeah. For any musicians or filmmakers or anybody that's creative or a content creator right now, you know, this is the absolute best time to get in and start getting your feet wet, and getting your hands dirty in the space, because, you know, all the previous evolutions of what was here are ready to be utilized and are changing even more so now with these market conditions. So, you know, coming in right now, it's the most creative, empty bandwidth time, right, to come in and utilize some of these tools. One would be, I would implore people to look at this app called Bullz, B-U-L-L-Z. You can download it and create content and earn a word of mouth token, WOM. I want to do an episode with you guys, maybe next week or the week after. We'll dive a little deeper on it. But it's a good friend of mine, Melanie Moore, who created this whole word of mouth ecosystem, who came from marketing tech. But yeah, you can literally create content around anything. You can repurpose content you already make on TikTok or whatever. It's, you know, crypto specific. But, you know, if you're trying to come in and make content about the industry, or, you know, your project specifically, or, you know, you're a creator with influence, add me, because I can get you verified over there with her, and brands can or projects can have you come on and make content for their project, right? So it's just a great ecosystem. So it's called Bullz is the name of the crypto specific one, but there's a couple in the product suite where you can create testimonial based marketing content and have it earn for you. So definitely some cool stuff that I'll leave you guys out on with that.
I definitely am happy that we have Dan and Tyler to spearhead our sessions on Metaverse and Web3. Everyone can get familiar with the space as we move into our next evolution with the Sync Report. So, and everyone then can experience our Metaverse and our Web3 and, of course, our Zavatars. So thank you, Dan. Thank you, Tyler. So we are moving into the next stage of the Sync Report. And for everyone that's here now, Jason is not here today. I have the reins. I am Kevin. Some people call me Crazy Kevin. Well, nobody calls me that. But I am the one that is moving the needle today. So we are doing holiday music today. Listening to holiday music for the Sync Report holiday show. The holiday show will be our first show. We're already writing the script for it for our network show. And so although some people are hot, we're going to be cold and cool with our holiday music. Before we get to our holiday music, I want to bring into the fray my film Deadly Night Out, a psychological thriller. I've been listening over the past 3 weeks to music submitted for a particular scene in the film. And there's been so much incredible music that has come in. It's been a little bit overwhelming, actually. So with that being said, I have not picked the final song, but I have whittled it down to 3 songs. We're actually kind of tweaking the scene around the 3 songs to see which one is going to fit the best. And then some scenes that are around that particular scene. So that first song is called Use Me. And it's by an artist named Nome. Can we play a little bit of that song?
Lose your mind. Feel it come to life. Open your eyes. Haven shut so tight. So I can feel the trembling underneath my skin. Waiting, wanting to give in.
I have to say that definitely gave me a full depth, and it really met the sync brief in so many ways. And you can hear that's a vocal track. And so in the initial brief, I talked about just instrumentals. But on the sync report, I did open it up for vocals as well. And so I'd have to say that one, they sent the vocal track and the audio track, and both of them work. We have Shattered by Secrets, which is Dunn Wilder, Epic Trailer Songs. Can we play a little bit of that?
when you buried things inside, when your words are wrapped in lies, when you smile so you can hide just a part of your disguise, and you know you're out of time, you've crossed the line. Cross the line. You can run away like a.
So in this one, the music certainly had the feel of what was in the brief. The lyrics kind of took it over the edge. Cross the line. And when I talked about the brief and how you had the two girls that are coming to confront another girl, to coerce her, to seduce another man, I mean, it doesn't get much more muddy and crossing the line than that. So Lisa and your partner, incredible job. And then we have one of our hometown favorites, Midas Royale with The Journey. Can we pull that song up?
Comes calling across the miles. A voice from long ago. A blur in a watering eye. Like a memory catching hold. The fear of a wanted man.
The lyrics, I mean, definitely those came from the heart and soul. And then you had enough instrumentation that can be used for other places. But, you know, this is another one that it really feels like the setting and the tone. So, I mean, I do wish that I had the winner, but what this has forced me to do is to actually reconfigure some of what we're doing with the edit to see which one fits the best. So we'll have the winner next week. So moving forward, we're going to move into Christmas music. Some holiday cheer. Holiday cheer in hot July. So
happy Christmas.
I guess we'll be able to cool some of you guys over there in the UK off a little bit, at least musically. So do we have any of our songs teed up for our Christmas music?
We are ready to go.
Okay. So I guess our judges today are going to be myself, Vinks, and Phil. Phil, are you good to be a judge today?
Oh, yeah. Always ready.
That's his best Vinks impression. Vinks, I think he might have you. So let's go with our first song.
Next up, we have Mistletoe by Kirsty McGee. Play it, Milfredo.
It's Christmas at last, and nobody wants to know. I'm all alone, there's nobody home under the mistletoe. Thank you.
fruit on the vine withered and fell, leaves in a swell of snow. Summer is flown, leaves me alone under the
gorgeous, gorgeous song. Who do we have the musician in the room?
Hi.
Christy?
Kirsty, yeah.
Kirsty. Oh, what a beautiful song.
Thank you so much.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm a singer-songwriter based in the UK. Been doing it for a very long time. And I guess I'm sort of switching towards the synth side of things for the past few years. This song started out with me playing guitar, voice, and flute. And I met a lovely woman called Kimberly who I think is here as well. And she very kindly played the piano for me, which it really needed. And yeah, it's lovely to do that kind of collaboration where something that you don't have, somebody else has, and it just kind of brings everything to a different level.
So you played the flute on this?
Yeah. I do flute and arrangements, flute choirs and bass flute and yeah, musical saw and stuff.
Wow, that was... Now, I'm a filmmaker, so I'm going to pass it off to Vinks and to Phil to comment on the music side of it. But, I mean, the flute was... I mean, that's what really flowered the song. The vocals were just... They were a little bit melancholy, you know? But, I mean, that really kind of...
Sometimes you need melancholy.
that's right. Absolutely. It really, really gorgeous song. And so... I want to hear Vinx's thoughts on this.
No, man, I loved it. It has a potential of being one of those jazz standards. Depends on who does it and what treatments they do. It's a great bed, and it's got a lot of possibilities for decorations, depending on the artist that wants to tackle that. Love the movement. The chord change is beautiful. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay, do we have another song queued up?
We sure do. Season of Light by David Carroll. Spin it, Wilfredo.
Traditions may vary. A treasure trove of joy and laughter.
season of light. There'll be magic all night. Our hearts will take flight because love fills this season. Protected from the cold. Do we need the wise man to tell us what we know?
Okay, I'm going to pass this off to Phil, but before I pass it off to Phil, I saw a comment from Christy Flutecore McGee, gorgeous and rich. Let me know if you ever need a live flute, bass flute, musical saw arrangements, David. Wow, what a great comment. Let's get comments from Phil first.
Oh, I love that. That really took me somewhere. It's sort of like Bab Streisand territory. I could imagine someone like that singing it. It took me to those old films again. You know, I guess that music is just suitable for those sort of scenes. And I really enjoy the performance, nice arrangement, you know, really good choice of instrumentation, great production. And I love the voice. It just, I can't think of anything else to say to it apart from that. I really enjoyed that. Very easy to listen to, very laid back. I'd love to hear it again on the studio speakers.
It definitely has a classic feel to it. So we don't have anything of that yet, so let's go ahead and put that in the slot for consideration. We have David on stage.
Hello there.
Yes, David, how are you?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the wonderful comments. We really appreciate it. That singer is Michelle Schaefer, and we just met recently at a Sync Summit online Zoom event, and we've only actually worked together via Zoom. And we got together a few months ago and said, let's write some Christmas songs. So that's the first one we produced, and we're really happy with the way it came out.
Oh, great. So when did you make that song?
In the last month.
Oh, awesome. How timely is that?
Yeah, we've got three or four more we're in the works, and I'll submit those as soon as I get them done.
Oh, love it. Love it. Thanks, Dave. I mean, you're a regular. So and you
I appreciate that. Yeah,
yeah, you I always bring you great music for us.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm learning so much listening to everybody's comments. It's just a wonderful experience to hear and learn from all you folks. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have someone that's well-versed in flute core I don't know if you know that genre, but that's ready to play flute on your track. So
yeah, I'm going to follow that up. That's awesome. Thank you.
Okay. I am very happy. I'm in the mood. I'm in the spirit. I'm in the Christmas spirit. Hot and hot Miami.
Should we have one more, Kevin?
Yes, we have this one more.
So the next song is Let's Get Merry by Silverson featuring Michelle Rescinio. Spin it, Wilfredo.
La 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 la, happy holiday. A sweet smell's a coming from the kitchen. Air's filled with ginger and cinnamon. String up the tinsel and light. Everything shining and bright. Gather round, feel the magic in the air. Frosty on the TV. Presents are waiting under the tree. Watching the snow start to fall. Feeling joy decking the whole world. Gather round, gather round. Feel the magic in the air. On the Yule log. Spread cheer, dancing with delight. Oh yeah, Santa's coming tonight. Let's get merry. Let's have fun today. Let's get merry. Happy holidays.
Oh yeah. Woo!
Let's get merry, yeah. La, 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 la. Come on, yeah. Happy holidays.
Woo! Fa la 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 la. How many ways can you say that? Gail, I loved that tune. I was waiting at the end of the tune for maybe a little hip hop verse there. That
okay.
But that was definitely funky. So I'm gonna start off with Phil.
Hey Gail. Groovy track. You definitely ticked all the Christmas boxes there for sure.
Thank you.
Sipping on egg.
Every single one. Yeah.
I can't take all the credit. It's a collaboration. Silverson is Rob Gibson and I. We collaborate together on a lot of songs, so
Well, it definitely, I think it could be a bit of an earworm, that one. It sort of sticks in, you know, the happy holiday bit. It definitely works. I think that's kind of interesting. And the lyrics, yeah, they just work throughout. I think, like I say, you've ticked all the obvious ones, which is always good if someone is looking to sync something, they're going to want some of those words in there. The production maybe could be, you know, a little more exciting. The groove was pretty good. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I think it's a pretty cool track. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
The Sync Report cast will be back with your hosts, Rose Ganguza, Jason P. Rothberg, and me, Colin O'Donoghue. Until next time, take care and be kind.
Thank you for listening.
Today's episode was produced by Jason P. Rothberg, Kevin Sharpley, Paula Flack, and Robert Capadonna. It was written by Jason P. Rothberg, Kevin Sharpley, Lisa Dunn, and Paula Flack. Editing was by Jason P. Rothberg, Milfredo Seven, Paula Flack, Edgar Edge Kameh, and Adam McNamara. Research by Lisa Dunn. Graphic design by Jody Lynn Talevi. Brought to you by Zavatar.